This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Treks on the Line, a podcast on Trek.fm where we provide audio commentary for every episode of Star Trek Picard. But there aren't any episodes of Star Trek Picard, and there probably won't be until February at the earliest. So we're killing some time with some audio commentaries for Star Trek episodes with Picard or others or whatever. And in this particular episode, we are going to provide an audio commentary for season 3, episode 26 of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Mm-hmm. Some random episode.
The Best of Both Worlds.
I'll take your word for that.
The Best of Both Worlds? Mm-hmm. I rented it so that we could watch it together. Anyway, if you go to change.org, there's a petition up there.
Yep.
It's called Convince Max to Attend STLV.
Yep.
It's got a picture of the three-armed dude playing a mandolin or something.
Mm-hmm.
Currently has 11 signatures.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
I'm just saying, right? I came across someone independently who didn't tag any of us, who tweeted it for their followers. I'm just saying, go to change.org, find Convince Max to Attend STLV, sign the petition, and, you know, while you're there, sign another petition for, like, an end to global warming or something important. So we got one person who posted something in the Babel Conference that I want to read. I mean, other people posted stuff in the Babel Conference and it was awesome. People who are like, I signed the petition. And that's great. But Mark said, one of my favorite shows. The two time travel issues I noticed as asked for by the hosts. One, when the future Picard first tries to find the anomaly, they can't find it, but then a bit later they do. If the anomaly grows as it travels back in time, it should have been there the first time.
No, because there's a multiple timeline scenario where the past is being changed. I mean, we see, like, Picard is doing his thing and the anomaly isn't there because it literally has not been created in that timeline. So it doesn't exist in that timeline.
Okay. Take your word for it there. Okay. Two, the past Picard doesn't tell the crew his plan as he doesn't want to break the timeline. However, he should have known his actions in the past don't affect the present, as Troy has no recollection of Picard calling a red alert in the past when he suspects Q's involvement.
Yeah, that's not it. I mean, the big reason why, like, in my opinion, he doesn't, like, say, you know, to his crew during the encounter at Farpoint period of time is if he says, hey guys, I'm kind of me now, and also kind of me from 7 years in the future, and kind of me from like 30 years later. There's a lot of stuff that I can't go into right now, but we're kind of in a weird situation, so we need to do a bunch of random stuff that you don't understand, and I'm totally not crazy. Like, that's too much. Like, he can use his authority to get them to do what's necessary without giving them all the ammunition in the world to have him committed to an institution.
Okay. So those are not the problems that you have with this episode.
They are not.
So do you want to say what the problem was that you have with All Good Things or not?
I don't. I thought about it. I mean, like, the first time we did it, I played that game, and then you decided to do it the second time we did it in the last episode, and I stand by it. I think it's the way to go, because I really want somebody else to just see it. It's just so obvious.
Okay. I think last time someone did see it, whatever. We'll wait for someone to see it. All right. So today's episode, The Best of Both Worlds, Part 1. We're going to start at 0 on the counter, and we're going to give a countdown, and then we will start it up. And are you ready, Max?
Totally ready. Totally ready to go, ready to do it.
Okay. Then let's start this up in 3, 2, 1, start. There's the Enterprise. Now, see, here's the thing. I think, unlike most other episodes, this episode does a really good job of setting the tone from the very beginning as being very ominous because of the music more than anything. Like, in most other episodes, this scene would play out and you'd be like, oh, okay, they're going on an away mission, there's something weird, distress call, whatever. But here, you even before they say what the issue is, you hear that music and you're just like, something bad is going on. This is not the good times, you know? And I think that that's really effective. I think tonally this episode is pretty perfect. Yeah.
I'll have to take your word for that. I don't remember, I don't remember having an emotional reaction. You know what? Never mind. I have musical anhedonia. Music doesn't mean anything to me. Like, it's just noise. If it sounds like something I recognize as supposed to be anxious, anxiety-producing, or scary, I'm like, oh, this is going to be scary. But if it isn't recognizably one of those things, it's just noise. And I consider it a superpower.
Okay, cool.
So I'm not manipulated by sounds. Come on, guys. Yeah. What are you, birds?
So as far as cliffhangers are concerned, obviously, you know, this is considered to be like the gold standard. Do you think that this is the best cliffhanger of all time?
No, I don't think it's the best cliffhanger of all time.
What do you think is the best cliffhanger of all time?
It's got to be, did Alf leave Earth? We're still waiting for an answer on that one.
Okay. For me, it's got to be Crossroads Part 2, Season 3 finale of Battlestar Galactica.
Really? You know what's funny? You've never mentioned this before.
It still blows my mind. And I will never forget, like, seeing that and shooting up off the couch and being like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And then, like, calling you up and being like, did you watch it? And you're like, no. And then I'm like, oh my God, oh my God. And then, like, the next day seeing you at work and be like, did you watch it? And you're like, yeah, what was that? Oh my God, oh my God. And then we just did that for like another year and a half. So here we are into the opening credit sequence. And yeah, it still looks cool. Looks just as cool as it did last time. Maybe a little bit cooler because Will Wheaton's name is in it this time around. So
Will Wheaton does make everything cooler.
Pretty much everything. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't think of a thing he hasn't made cooler.
Yeah, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. But yeah, he's pretty good at making things cool. So. The Best of Both Worlds, interesting. No part one. Sometimes they have a part one, sometimes they don't have a part one. They're just kind of all over the place with it. Why not?
Well, I mean, if you put part one in there, then you're pretty much saying, like, yep, this is not the end.
Yeah, well, I agree. I just think it's an interesting choice that you don't see a lot in Star Trek.
I guess. I mean, like watching Voyager, they do the part ones and twos all over the place.
Yeah, it's all over the map. Mm-hmm. But, so here's George Murdoch, who also played God in Star Trek V, The Final Frontier.
Yep. That's why he has gravitas, but is not someone to be revered.
Yeah, I don't know what you mean by that, but that's cool.
Well, because he's clearly powerful, but he's not a deity.
Oh, okay. All right. You know, well, he's an admiral, so close, right? Anyway.
It's as close as you can get.
Yeah. So we got these writing credits again here that we were talking about last time. Here we got the Hans Beimler, the Richard Manning, the Ira Stephen Bear, the Michael Piller, and then in the end credits you have Ron Moore. So that's five again.
Mm-hmm.
Still a pretty lean staff. So,
yep. So, yep. In the first time I watched this, I was a kid, and it was a big deal and very dramatic and everything. But the thing I took away from it was, is that new commander going to be part of the show from now on?
Oh, you could totally see it, right?
Is difficult.
Yeah, but I could see her really working as part of the show. Like, I wish they would have brought her back. I wish they would have kept her on for a longer period. I mean, you got to figure, like, if this was done today, right? For one thing, they would have set her up prior to this episode, but also they wouldn't have resolved this in two episodes, right? They would have extended it for, you know, what, five episodes? Maybe this is the season-long arc? I don't know. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a different era. I just know that the big threat of this episode in rewatching Best of Both Worlds Part 1 and 2 is, like, it's her. It's like, are we really going to have to deal with her from now on? Like, I know Picard's a Borg, but, like, that's resolvable. Her presence is kind of a problem.
Well, she's messing with the dynamic, right?
Yeah, but in ways that are not dramatically interesting. They're just annoying.
No, I see it as being dramatically interesting because I really do see her as being like the new Riker, you know? Like, I totally understand where she's coming from. You know, she's like, look, you know, I've worked my butt off to be here. I want this job. And because you're super overqualified and unwilling to move on to the positions that you want to move on to, I can't move on to the positions that I want to move on to. I can see that.
Yeah. Yeah. My issue is like if her and Riker are on the same ship, it's going to be annoying because he clearly hates her and I have to take his side.
But you know that what would have happened is the Star Trek thing where at the end of Best of Both Worlds Part 2, they would have been like, well, I guess we have to work together for the next 4 years.
And then four or so years, Saturday nights at 7 p.m.
6 p.m. And then they would just get along, right?
I'm doing Eastern time.
Oh, okay. So here we have a poker game. See, like, this particular game, more than any other, probably is what made me be like, oh, man, poker is the best. I want to play poker, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Although, boy, Wesley Crusher, he's not good at this game.
No, he's not. I mean, he's a straight shooter.
He's so, I mean, like, everything that he does in this is so super awkward. Like, first he tries making a joke with Data, and they shoot him down. And then, you know, Troy calls him handsome, and he's like, oh, she called me handsome. And then he folds, and everyone's like, boy, you're really bad at this game. And then Shelby wins, and he sees that he could have won, and he's like, oh, man, I really am bad at this game. Like, I feel bad for him here because I feel embarrassed for him, like, every step of the way, you know? It's like, this is like the let's put down Wesley scene because he's an awkward teenager and really bad at poker.
I don't know, man. That whole scene to me just plays out like, yeah, this is exactly my teenage experience, you know? Like, you don't quite know how to do it. Everything's difficult. You're just like, I don't know how to fit in with other people, and I'm not sure if I really want to try this hard.
Well, but see, that's the thing, though, right?
Because, I think I'd rather like go off and be a divine being with the Traveler and solve problems in an animated series on CBS All Access, hopefully.
And that's all well and good, you know. It's just like the idea of like when you're watching it, especially as an awkward teenager, it's maybe too real, you know.
I don't know. For me, it was just like, yeah, that seems pretty normal. It seems about right. I didn't respond to it like I didn't cringe. I didn't have like that office reaction, the UK office especially, where like you're like, oh no, stop doing that, please don't. Oh, this is bad. No, don't. I didn't have that. It was more like, yeah. I get it. Yeah.
No.
I would do the same thing.
I totally had that cringing reaction and still do to this day. So we just saw the thing where Data is like, early bird, I think Shelby's mistaken. And that's one of those things. I mean, we saw it with Encounter at Farpoint and everything, where it's like, and we saw it in All Good Things. We see it all the time with Data, where someone will say like a common phrase and he'll be like, what the hell are they talking about? And it's like, you have an encyclopedic knowledge in your brain. Have you never heard of Early Bird Catches the Worm? Have you never watched season 3 of Star Trek The Next Generation? That seems unlikely, you know? Even if he's like, why do people say that? Like, I don't get why people say that. He would at least know what it is and what it means, you know?
Presumably. I mean, you'd think that he would have an understanding of it, but when you consider like the idea of in context understanding Early Bird Catches the Worm based on a presentation of it in a fictional environment, like if Sherlock Holmes says to Watson, Early Bird gets the worm, Data might be like, I suppose it does. I don't see how that means anything. What a weird non sequitur. Okay, Doyle, I guess you just were going crazy and wrote in some random nonsense for Sherlock to say. Oh, I guess it must be underlining Sherlock Holmes' psychological instability. Okay, so that's what it is. It's not a reference to anything. It's just a non sequitur to underline that Sherlock Holmes is psychologically unstable. So, I mean, like, you can justify him not understanding it. Like, what I always think of is at the end of the episode, Darmok. Data like here's Picard do his speech, sees everything go by, Picard explains the whole thing to him, and he just goes, I still don't get it. None of this makes any sense to me. You sound like a crazy person. When you try to explain it, you just sound crazier.
Okay, well, maybe that's it. Maybe that's part of his thing. I mean, I would assume that he has access to Urban Dictionary, but you know, maybe not. But maybe that's it, because like he doesn't get humor either, right? And
right.
You know, they try to play that off as like, well, he doesn't have emotions, but that doesn't seem to make sense, because I mean, to some degree, I mean, I think that humor is calculated, right?
I have maintained for a very long time that Data's inability to understand humor is it's a miscalculation on his part. He does understand humor. He does get it. He is capable of making jokes and understanding jokes. He just doesn't know how to respond in the same way he sees other people responding. So, because, I mean, Data is just a person. Like, it doesn't matter that he was made and constructed and everything was designed. Like, he is everything that a person is. And the idea that he doesn't get humor is a problem because humor is an intellectual behavior. Like, we... like Freud dissected the joke and he analyzed it pretty deeply, and other people have followed up on that to sort of figure out exactly what's going on in the structure of the mind when it comprehends the thing that is funny about a joke or a situation that is amusing. And it is not an emotional thing. It is an intellectual process. So Data should absolutely be able to understand jokes and make them, and he should be able to parse metaphors and make sense of them, and he is able to do all of those things. He just doesn't feel like he's doing it right because he isn't doing it the same as everyone else.
Okay. All right. That works for me. Yeah. So, I mean, we just saw that scene where Riker is trying to figure out what he's doing with his life. I think that's relatable. I mean, I think I can totally, latch on to that. I think a lot of people have been there, right? The idea of, like, am I comfortable where I'm at? Am I making a mistake by moving on? You know, that sort of thing. And, yeah. That works for me. And rewatching this, you know, we always think about this. I mean, here we're watching this for Star Trek Picard, right? You always think of it as a Picard episode because Picard goes through the most change. You know, he becomes Locutus. He becomes Picard again in the next part, spoilers. And he's affected by the events in this episode more than any other episode in the series, I would say, right? He comes out the other side changed. But when you watch this episode just as its own thing, it really is a Riker episode. It's told from Riker's perspective.
It's totally a Riker episode.
Yeah.
I mean, Picard is the princess, and Riker is Mario. I mean, it's his story. It's him, like, trying to, you know, solve the problem and everything. And, like, Picard being there in the beginning, like, it's like, what's he doing? He's just going through the motions. Like, oh, we're going to go here and deal with this Borg situation. Really, nothing dramatic happens to Picard until he's abducted.
Okay, so following this through, obviously the Borg are King Koopa.
Or Bowser, depending on which canon you're following.
So then Shelby's got to be Luigi, right? I mean, that's just what it is. I mean, that's exactly that. So then who's Yoshi?
Is Yoshi in this?
Is it Data?
No, Yoshi's Wesley.
Okay. All right.
Because Wesley makes them able to, you know, just walk on spikes and, like, walk along on top of thwomps, sometimes fly when they get a blue shell. The metaphor doesn't track perfectly, guys.
But it works pretty well. Pretty well on the whole. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Mario Maker, not even fly, apparently. Guys, why can't he fly?
I don't know. Here's an interesting thing. Look at the nacelle in this shot. It's flopped. You could see, just as the shot was ending, you could see NCC on the strut for the nacelle, and it was backwards. That's a flopped shot.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Who knew?
Probably the people who flopped it. Hmm.
Those chairs are really big. They remind me of, like, the chairs at the fancy rich people section of the Rosemont Theater, where they have, like, the oversized seats, and they're so big that you can't, like, extend your arms far enough out to put your arms on both armrests.
Is that when we saw Goldmember?
No, that was Yorktown. This is where we saw, Into the Spider-Verse, but we weren't in the rich people section. The construction of this theater is very strange in that it's got a main section and then a section for people who want to pay more money up top, and there's literally a wall in between them.
Yeah, I remember we went to a movie in one of those theaters, and they were like, would you like something to eat? And I was like, what is this?
Yeah, that was Gold Member. That was Yorktown. That was the very first one in the country. Now, like, every single theater does that.
I hated it.
Yeah.
I hated it.
Well, now it's standard operating procedure, so you know what? Times change.
Oh, God. People who want it. I mean, look, you can bring food into most theaters. Just bring a pizza in.
I don't know if that works, but okay.
Why not?
Well, how are you going to get it in?
Just carry it in.
People will stop you. You're not.
Who's
going to
stop you?
The people who work at the theater who don't allow you to bring in outside food or beverages.
I bring in outside food and beverages to every movie I go to.
Yeah, well, you're not supposed to.
No one's ever stopped me.
Well, they should. That's why you're the reason why the industry is struggling. I'm just saying.
That's right.
Got to get that
perk. Home video. That's right. Home video, son. That's where it's at. That's where the action is. Mm. Netflix all day.
No. No. Come on. Anyway, so here they are engaging the Borg, trying to stop this thing. It's not going too well.
Well, it's the Borg. I mean, what are you going to do? You can't really stop them. They're a force of nature.
I know, right? You know, people always talk about how, like, cinematic this episode is. And it's cinematic for Next Gen. But is it really that cinematic? I mean, isn't this the same year as, like, Terminator 2 Judgment Day? I'm just saying.
I don't know. I think of it as cinematic in the way that, like, a submarine movie is, you know, it's all about like building the tension, the things that are outside, you know, it's about angry people in an aluminum can yelling at each other about what to do about the thing outside.
I think this is literally the same year as Hunt for October.
Yeah. And this is better than that.
I'm not saying it's better or worse. I'm just saying
I am.
That movie is much more cinematic than this. You know, and I understand television budgets and whatnot, and we do get a barrel roll here.
This actually doesn't work for me. He's like, he does it way too early. Like, you know, it's just wait just a tiny bit more. You know, how hard could it have been to do another take?
Well,
where it's just a little bit later.
Well, I mean, I, you know, not for nothing, but, and I think I've told this story elsewhere before, but I'll tell it again. When Star Trek Generations came out, you know, he does a barrel roll in that. And I saw Star Trek Generations at the sneak preview on Thursday night. And then a bunch of my friends from the Sci-Fi Club were going to see it on Friday. And I was like, I want to go. But it was like a last minute thing. And they were all at the school.
Science fiction and fantasy club. Okay. You can't just omit the fantasy because you don't like it.
That's what I always did. So anyway, they were all hanging out in Mr. Gogger's chem tech class because he was having a special after school function where everyone could tie-dye shirts. It was the 90s, guys. It was the 90s. So anyway, I was like,
stop judging him. It was the 90s.
Yeah.
That's why it's okay that he was hanging out with a teacher tie-dyeing shirts at school when he could have been. Oh, no. Actually, judge him all you want. That's terrible.
Well, but I wasn't. But all of my friends were. Oh, by the way, I'll get back to the story in a second, but this is one of those shots which I never knew existed. The shot where Picard walks from Wesley Station to Data Station and the camera pans with him, that's one of those anamorphic pan and scan shots that were done in this show rather frequently, which I had absolutely no idea existed until, like, 5 years ago. It blew my freaking mind. But they didn't have the technology to track with an effect in the background. So they created tracking shots by shooting with anamorphic lenses in widescreen and then pan and scanning the image.
Yeah, I get it.
I was explaining it to the theoretical listener. I could not believe that when I saw it. It blew my mind. And now every time I see a shot like that, I'm just like, oh, that's one of them. And it's really freaking obvious, you know, because it's got that pan and scan movement. Anyway, so all of my friends were hanging out in Mr. Gogger's class at the high school, and they were all planning on going to Bricktown, or is it Brickyard? I always forget, to see Star Trek Generations on Friday night. And I'm like, how am I not going? And I made a decision. I'm like, I'm going to go there. I'm going to ride my bike and go there, drop my bike off, and I'm going to go see Star Trek Generations with all these people who really probably don't even know I exist because I'm a freshman and they're slightly older than me. But whatever. So
I can tell you this. We didn't know.
Okay.
But it wasn't because you were a freshman. It's because we didn't know anyone existed.
Okay, fair enough.
We were very oblivious to the vast majority of human beings.
Okay.
Basically, if you didn't come out and say 30% of Monty Python and the Holy Grail, you were not a real person to us.
Okay, fair enough. So I needed to get my bike out of the garage, right? And I had just seen the movie Generations where Geordi does his barrel roll. So I was like, okay, I got it. I'm in a hurry, you know? So even though I had never done this before, I brought my bike out and then I hit the garage door to close. And I was going to, you know, normally I would just like walk out leisurely as the door is closing. But this time I like held back for a few seconds and waited for the door to close so that I could barrel roll out of the garage. Mm-hmm. But like at the same time, there was like a sensor where like if the garage door was too low and something went out, then the thing would like just come right back up. So I needed to time it so that it was down low enough to sort of justify a barrel roll, but not so low that the garage door would then go back up, because then I'd have to wait for it to go back up and bring it back down. I was in a hurry because I was running late, which is why I was riding my bike there. So I did a barrel roll out of the garage with a garage door, which was maybe a third of the way closed before seeing Star Trek Generations on opening night.
That's a great story.
Thanks.
I like the part about the sensor.
It really adds to the overall.
I'll tell you what it does. It grounds it in the way that your barrel roll rolled you on the ground.
Thanks.
Covering you in dead leaves and dirt.
You don't know how true that is, but you know.
No, I do.
Yeah, there was probably some motor oil there too, I'm sure, but you know.
Oh yeah, I mean like you were exposed to some carcinogens for sure.
Yep.
And you, like, you probably inhaled some bugs. I mean, like, it's not a good idea to roll around on the ground.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter where you are. It's just not good.
Nah, you know, whatever. It worked for Geordi, so it could work for me, too.
Yeah, that's carpeted. He's indoors in a carpeted spaceship. Guys, the spaceships are carpeted.
And the walls are carpeted, too. I was noticing that as I was watching this today, and I admire that, and I'm assuming it's for acoustic reasons. I'm assuming it's because they have like hidden video projectors in each room where they can, you know, transform any environment into a personal theater or a home theater. And if you're going to do that, you're going to want the sound to be as dead as possible. in order to, you know, prevent echoes and things coming from improper locations or whatever. So, yeah, carpet those walls, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, there are a lot of ways of justifying it. I mean, I also justify it by, like, every time anything happens, everyone stumbles around in the hallways, and it would be good to have as many soft surfaces as possible because, you know, one kid, because the ship's full of kids, one kid, like, bashes his head on a wall and dies, and then you're like, well, why weren't there carpeting on the walls? Well, what's up with that? That's a lawsuit on your hands right there. They'd sue the Enterprise, and that's no good. That'd be that Picard in the firing line, and the whole ship goes down. It's a terrible situation. I mean, just legally speaking, you got to carpet them walls.
You know, I think I figured it out, actually. Like, if you look at the rise in podcasting over like the past like 15 years, like in its existence, it's like there are so many more podcasts now than there used to be. I mean, just the other day I was on Twitter and people were talking about this new Star Trek podcast. And I'm like, I had no idea that that was even a thing. And like, they're already more popular than us. So I think it's probably one of those things, like one of those, like almost like Andy Warhol-ish things where like we're headed to the point where in the future, everybody will have a podcast. So the walls of all environments are carpeted just so that the acoustics of the podcast will be as good as humanly possible.
I'm on board for this hypothesis. I just feel like if we're going to accept this, we got to get like some podcasts from some of these crew members. Why isn't there a CBS All Access sponsored spinoff of Discovery, which is just Tilly's podcast?
Holy my cow. God!
Why is this happening? Not a thing?
Oh my God! Come on, guys!
Jeez, I feel I. This is such a good idea.
It is. Oh, my God. This needs to happen. Hey, you know, they've already got Tawny Newsom on board to do a podcast, like the official Star Trek podcast or whatever it is. And, yeah, she's playing a character on one of these shows. So,
yeah.
I mean, you could just do that. See? Why don't they have us do any of these podcasts?
I don't know. We're not in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what it is. Anyway. Okay, so where were we at? Oh, yes. The Borg are doing some Borg stuff.
They're Borging. They're Bjorning and Borging.
And here they are on the ship. Now, watch the woman in the background, the science officer. Like, as this is going down, I mean, I guess she's just doing, like, they need to do a lot of science stuff, and she's just, like, intently sciencing, but, like, it takes, like, three or four, like, shots for her to be like, what's going on back there? And then, yeah, I mean, when Riker gets thrown over the thing, she's like, hey, Riker, are you okay? I mean, she's not allowed to say that because of, you know, like, Screen Actors Guild rules or whatever, but, you know, the intent is there. And yeah, it's just weird. It's just weird that, you know. But anyway. And then she just goes back to her station. And I mean, I kind of love this scene in that, you know, like he gets beamed off, you know, and it happens like while Riker is like on the floor. And I mean, Worf, and understandably, since he's the head of security, like he jumps up and he's like, what's going on, guys? Where's the captain? Right? But Riker just kind of like instantly accepts the fact that he is in command, right? Like he doesn't miss a beat. And he's just like, let's do this. And then they say that they're going to Sector 001, the Terran system. And since, you know, nobody knows that Terran system refers to Earth, Riker goes, Earth.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's one of those Star Trek things. I mean, they made fun of it on Futurama in a way that really nailed it, where like people talk about things in a technobabbly way and then somebody explains it.
Yeah.
And
time travel.
Yeah, it's sometimes it is infuriating.
I mean, the thing that my friend Zach always brings up is The Matrix, where Morpheus is like AI, and then Neo's like artificial intelligence, or something along those lines, you know.
Yeah. It's a little bit more excusable in that context.
I guess. Maybe.
Because, I mean, in that context, there are a lot of reasons why he might react that way. Like, wait, hold on. You mean, like, AI caused all this nonsense? But like, on the other hand, you could be like, wait, this is the future. Does AI stand for a different thing now?
I guess you could assume that to some degree. Yeah. All right.
Could be alabaster interiors. You never know.
So the Borg are going too fast. Enterprise can't keep up. Need to slow it down so they can get off one good shot. And that could be problematic.
Mm-hmm.
But Shelby's got a plan.
All right, so I have an unpopular opinion. Here's a hot take. Mm-hmm. This is the best the Borg have ever looked. They evolved the appearance of the Borg over time in a direction that I feel makes them look less plausible and less intimidating. I don't quite buy, like, I have a hard time buying that the Borg are like, you know what? All our lights will be green. Yeah. Green lights.
Maybe. That's what's up. Maybe the that's just, you know, it's cheaper to make green LEDs or something.
Sure. Sure. But, you know, I mean, there's so much stuff that's naturally colored. I mean, like, if the Borg, like, are, like, stranded on a planet and they have to build a fire for warmth, the flames would be green because it's ridiculous how obsessed with the color green they are. There's a point where 709 has a hallucination that the Borg have taken over the ship and the warp core suddenly turns green. Like, oh, yeah, they would change the color of the warp drive to green. Hey, not every natural reaction that is green is superior. Like, that's, it's just stupid. I don't like the green obsession. Like, a monochrome thing is fine. There's some red, there's some blue, there is some green. And that's no problem with green being the dominant color. Like, red is the dominant color of barns because the paint is cheapest. There's an explanation for colors being dominant in a particular thing. But that every single light is green is dumb.
Okay. I mean, you know, I can totally understand it. Like, if you have the choice, it's like, well, green's cool, you know?
Yeah, I just don't buy the Borg thinking that green is cool. Like, my thinking, like, I have actually justified this. Like, I have actually said, like, the Borg must have assimilated a culture that was extremely proficient at lighting. Like, they pretty much nailed lighting. Like, they had it down to the level where, like, they make the most efficient lights in the universe. And they're so good that no other technology has replaced that lighting technology. And their lighting technology was all based around a series of technologies, but at the core of it, one thing is true. The color green was the most power-efficient color. And that's why they got there. Because of one technology from one culture that made green the most efficient color for lighting. But it's a stretch.
I mean, I could see that. It's like, you know, an entire race of Robert Richardsons. I'd be down with that. Their movies must look amazing. You know?
I don't know who that is.
He's a cinematographer. You ruined it, but that's okay. Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely think that they look better in First Contact, but at the same time, like, when I saw First Contact, I was like, and I hate myself for this, I was like, why do they look so different? They shouldn't look like this, you know? They don't look like this in, you know, Q Who. And it's like, okay, but you have a budget now and you can do more things. So you do more things because you have a budget.
I'm cool with it, them looking different. That's fine. That makes perfect sense. I don't like that they're looking different. Like got them to converge on a color scheme.
Okay.
I don't buy them having like a set of palette, like a color swatch palette, and going boom. That's the one. Okay. That's the one we're going with.
All right. Whatever. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how they look in Picard, because obviously they're going to look different, and they haven't revealed what that is yet or how that is yet. That's kind of cool. It's exciting.
I swear to God, if they're all green, I'm going to freak out.
Well, I don't think they will all be green, but...
I'm going to throw stuff at the wall.
You know what Kermit says? It's not easy being green.
Yeah.
Cut them some slack.
It is easy to not be green.
Okay, whatever. So here they come to the Borg dresser.
Yeah, the Borg maturation drawer.
Yeah, so... Yeah.
This is where we keep the people's clothes that we assimilate. We hold on to their clothes for a while. Over here we have the babies. We keep the babies in drawers so that they can get older real fast. We keep them near the clothes.
You think it is the same set?
I do.
It looks pretty similar, right?
I do think it is the same set.
Yeah. I almost, like, you don't know how close I came today to calling an audible and, texting you and being like, we should do Q Who first. There would have been some sense to that, but yeah. I also don't know with the timing whether or not we can get to Q Who. I mean, I think we should, but just wasn't too sure about the timing. And do we want to stick in like a chronological order? I don't think we necessarily do.
I don't want to care. Bounce around
some places, right?
I don't care at all.
Okay.
Jump around.
Right. Just like...
No, stop.
Yeah. Anyway. whatever. Okay.
Stop.
Okay.
So these little distribution-y nodes thing, fine. I accept that.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a good idea. And also, this is like one of those instances where, you know, like, and it really did stick with me where, you know, these things, they never go well. But in this particular case, when Crusher's like, let's look at this from the mosquito's point of view, mm-hmm. you know? And then Data's like, interesting metaphor. Like he's like, I am down with whatever I don't know what you're going to say, but I'm down with it, you know?
Well, I think Data's like, thinking like, oh my God, finally, somebody who can explain how this, like, their random non sequitur nonsense, what that means. Because she's like, I'm going to say something crazy. And he's like, whoa, you're going to explain what you mean by that, right?
Yeah, but at the same time, he's like, I'm here from the ground up. I don't need to try to figure out what they mean by burning the midnight oil. I'm going to be the one they need to figure out what I'm saying when I'm like mosquito point of view. And they're going to be like, what? And I'm going to be like,
every party. He's like, have we thought about this from the mosquito's point of view, guys? Guys, mosquito's point of view, right?
Yep. But it totally works because she explains it and I'm like, oh, I get it. And I know exactly what they're doing. Whereas if she hadn't said that.
This one time we were on the Borg ship and we were like, let's think about this from the mosquito's point of view. If we sting them in a sensitive spot, they might stop to itch. Right? And it worked. It was great. And I was part of it. I'm Data.
Yeah, but no, I mean, I think that is a case of that type of thing working in sci-fi where normally it doesn't. So, yeah.
No, it works. It works all right.
And we just saw Picard turn into a Borg.
Did he?
Yeah, very impressed in this entire episode, the way that they're able to very carefully get him to shine that laser into the camera lens directly.
Yeah.
Very impressed by that. I am curious. I mean, I'm assuming there's enough glass and film and everything going through that laser needs to go through, that whoever is looking through the viewfinder isn't going to have eye damage when they're looking at it, right? I'm assuming. But I mean, I don't know for sure.
I mean, maybe. On the other hand, who cares? I mean, maybe the person doing it is like all got all kinds of crazy lines in their vision when they close their eyes, you know? Maybe. when they look around in the room, they're like, why is there like a squiggle everywhere?
Yeah. I think it's probably safe, but who knows?
Small price to pay. So Locutus is pretty rad looking.
Yeah.
Like, as Borg go, he's one of the coolest looking Borg.
They gave him a six pack.
Yeah.
They gave him that laser.
I feel like the
Borg. Oh my god, probably a lens flare! Oh my god! Oh my god! I think I just disintegrated. Is this the JJ verse? I don't know what's going on.
No, this isn't garbage. I mean,
okay.
It's watchable.
And then I guess that's the end of the episode. Mr. Worf, yeah. Fire.
That's so how the episode ended.
So we didn't talk about this. So you saw this when it aired.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I was there day one, ground zero, when it happened. And then I waited months.
Yeah.
Months, not 7 seconds for Netflix to start the next episode, like all of you spoiled monsters of the modern era.
I will just say, I'll let you continue your story, but I will just say here that my absolute favorite was there's a television writer. I want to say it was Ashley Edward Miller, but I could be wrong about that. And he was showing this to his kids for the first time, and the episode ended, and he said, okay, now we are going to wait 3 hours, 1 hour for each month that I had to wait when I was your age to see this thing. And apparently they were ready to murder him, but they did it. So anyway, I waited like a whole commercial break because it was my very first Star Trek The Next Generation Viewer's Choice Marathon. And Best of Both Worlds, parts 1 and 2 were the numbers 1 and 2 episodes, not in that order.
Numbers so, 1 and 2 episodes.
Yeah, okay. But I had to wait for a commercial break, an extended commercial break, before seeing part 2.
It's funny you tell that story about that writer, because I did that to a girlfriend of mine.
Yeah? How'd that work out for you?
It didn't work out great. We're not together anymore.
Okay. Well, whatever.
That wasn't the only reason.
But it was the main reason.
It was definitely in the mix.
So
I'm the kind of guy that does this.
Yeah, you know. So what did you think about that wait? I mean, the 3 months or whatever. How was that summer for you?
Oh, it was terrific. I wasn't obsessed with it. Like, I didn't think about it every moment of the day. I didn't think about it. Like, I wasn't like terrorized or like I didn't wake up in the middle of the night screaming. But I did think about it a few times every day and think, this is just an unreasonable amount of time. Like I don't know when the next episode airs. I know it's sometime in the fall, but like, is it September? Is it, I don't know. And then like the release date came out and I was like, okay, well, that's when it happens. But like, I mean, that was a weird time, man. Like, I had already become well aware of like TV and season finales and the concept of cliffhangers, but like that was the first big cliffhanger that I had to live through, and it sucked.
I want to do a thing just because I think it's interesting and whatever, and probably no one else is going to care, but I'm just, you know, whatever.
It's here, a good way to set it up. No one else will probably care about this, so let's do it.
Yeah. So here are all of the movies which were number one at the box office during the time period between Best of Both Worlds Part 1 and Part 2. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is because I'm thinking that you probably spent your summer watching movies, right?
What year is this? Is this
1990, right? 1990? So these were the movies that you saw theoretically while killing time until Best of Both Worlds Part 2 started. Okay? Here we go.
I don't think so.
Okay. Dick Tracy?
I saw it.
Yeah. Days of Thunder?
No.
Die Hard 2?
Yeah. But not immediately.
Okay. Ghost? Getting your Whoopi Goldberg fix?
No, not in theaters.
Presumed Innocent?
No.
Flatliners?
No, not in theaters.
Dark Man?
Not in theaters.
Postcards from the Edge?
Not in theaters.
And Goodfellas?
No, not until like a few years ago.
Really? Interesting. Yeah. So it was a long summer for you then. Okay.
Well, I don't think so when you started, because I was like, I think I wasn't in the country for a big chunk of that time.
Oh, yeah. It's weird. I mean, like, we can talk about this later on when we do Descent, which we will do now. But Descent was my first cliffhanger. And I was like, this is amazing. Like, this could be better than Best of Both Worlds. I spent my entire summer looking forward to Part 2. And then Part 2 came out, and I was like, that was a waste
of
time.
Worth the wait.
Okay. But, you know, it was one of those things, though, where it's this weird sort of conflict, because you're like, the thing that I want most in the world is to see Part 2. But the thing that I want least in the world is to go back to school. And those two things are married together.
Yeah.
And, I mean, what's the end result of that? I mean, it's not good. It's not good. Anyway, so that was the Best of Both Worlds, Part 1. And next time we will be watching the Best of Both Worlds, Part 2.
Is that how we're doing it?
That's how we're doing it. So in the meantime, Max, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm on the internet, JMax Hagel on Twitter. That's it.
Yeah,
I have an Instagram. I don't know what its name is.
Okay, but don't forget to go to change.org. And sign the petition to convince Max to go to STLV.
Yeah, if we hit a certain number, I will tell my wife about it, and then she will be angry at Mike.
whatever works. You know? All right. Okay. So, you can find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K, and also on Letterboxd, if you want to see what movies I'm watching.
Why is that still a thing?
It's my favorite social media platform.
Okay.
Anyway, you can find me on thenerdparty.com doing a show called Retro Perspective, and you can find me on filmdamagepod.com with you doing a show called Film Damage, where we talk about film projection. So that's about it for this week, but until next time, the line must be drawn where?
Between Enterprise Season 2 and Enterprise Season 3.